Lots to get to, so we'll welcome Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts on Hockey Night in Canada aboard the program once again. Before we get to the Aquilini presser, Boudreaux, the Capitals, Bob Gainey, etc., Leafs take on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight, Friedge, one of 10 games on the go. And the news is not great for Mitch Marner, 3 to 4 weeks with a shoulder injury, but did they, before we get to Marner, dodge a bullet with Rasmus Sandin?
The kind of funny thing about it, Jeff, if anything's funny about it, is that it's almost the reverse, I think, of what they were expecting. They held Marner out of the games this weekend for precautionary reasons, but Sheldon Keefe said after Saturday's game they didn't think it was anything major. And I know in the moment they were really worried about what was the situation with Sandin. As a matter of fact, I think that's one of the reasons that Spezza was so upset, was because that they thought that Sandin was seriously hurt. So they do definitely dodge the bullet with Sandin. There's no question about that. From what they initially believed, it's great news, and it sounds like it's a little longer than what they thought with Marner. But overall, I think they'll take it.
They will, and they'll welcome a couple of new faces to the lineup tonight. Alex Thieves joins the Toronto Maple Leafs roster, and also Christians Rubens. And
yeah.
Why this is of particular note, big, tall Latvian defenseman. You know, I remember when they drafted him, someone there told me they have that he's a kid that they had a lot of belief in. They think he had a really big ceiling. It's taken a while to get there. And although technically Timothy Liljegren did play one game with the Newfoundland Growlers, you know, this is, you know, we always talk about from the root to the fruit, from the bottom of the organization all the way up to the NHL. You know, this is the first player who played significant time in the ECHL with Toronto's affiliate to make it to the big squad. I know he's going to get... You know, he's not going to play 15 minutes tonight, but you have a thought on Christians Rubens making his debut for the Maple Leafs this evening. It's a great, I always love the ECHL to NHL stories.
Well, Jeff, maybe you and I have the same sources, because I heard very similar things, that that when they drafted Rubens, they considered him a real diamond in the rough. They considered him somebody that would play NHL games for them, although it would take time. It's basically the same thing, although it was a different regime, that was said about Connor Brown. When they drafted Connor Brown, they believed that he would play games for them and he would be an NHLer, but it would take time. And look what he turned into. And if Rubens is half as good as Connor Brown, I'm sure the Maple Leafs would be thrilled with that. But yes, they saw him as a guy who could play. It's a test and potentially a tribute to the way they saw their development system, ECHL to AHL to hopefully for them NHL. And they really believe in him. They think he's got a chance. And, you know, we're going to find out. And, you know, the other thing about this is, especially on the blue line, you get the sense that when you look at what the Maple Leafs are now and what the post-deadline product could look like, it's not settled. It's not settled. That, you know, we know they've had Hall and Dermott out there. It's obvious that they're kind of looking at their blue line and saying, what do we have here? Where are we going here? And what do we need to address here? So, like, I don't think this year you're thinking that Rubens is going to play a major role on a playoff run team, but I think you're starting to look at him and say, all right, what have we got here for next year or down the road? And I really do think they're looking at their blue line quite in depth about how they're going to attack it come trade deadline.
You know, Rubens played for Latvia at the World Championship on the top pair, and that was, yes, the team that beat Team Canada in the World Championship last year. All right, to Vancouver. We'll get to the game if we get time, but I want to get your thoughts on the press conference. It's not often we hear anyone from the Aquilini family talking publicly, but yesterday there was Francesco Aquilini. Do you have a thought on what we heard yesterday, either from him or Stan Smeal or anyone for that matter?
You know, I thought it was interesting. I think there's a few things there that I thought were interesting. Number one, that, I mean, it's always news when the owner speaks there because they don't speak a lot. It's been a while.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they said that all options are open for whether it's president of hockey ops or general manager or potentially both. You know, we've talked, Jeff, a lot. As you know, people around the league have asked us to stop talking about the Canucks on our podcast. They're waving the white flag. Too much Canucks. Enough with the Canucks. But, you know, they're definitely doing deep dives into a lot of people. They, you know, I thought it was interesting that they said that we'll consider anything. Nothing is off limits, potentially dipping back into the past. I think it's really interesting to see, you know, what the direction is going to be. I did speak a little bit more to Stan Smith last night because, you know, there was something he said in the press conference that was really interesting to me about how he said that after watching Saturday night's game, he felt that he, you know, maybe had to be a bit more vocal with his opinions. And he said he didn't reach out to anyone. Like, he didn't go from there and call ownership or anyone like that and said, we have to do something. But he did get a call the next morning at 8 a.m. saying, you know, how do you feel about doing this? You know, it was interesting. He said that after a night like that, he said, as a guy who's basically given his entire professional life to the Canucks, yeah, it was very tough to watch. He said that nobody escapes blame, not the ownership, not the front office, not the executives, not the coaches, not the players. And it's very hard to fire people. But he felt that, and it's very hard to see people go, but he just felt that they reached a point where they had no choice but to do that. And, you know, the thing he said that was really interesting was he was the one who met with the team to introduce Bruce Boudreau to them. And he said that he, you know, spoke to the team briefly. He wouldn't talk about what he said. But the one thing he did say is that he's always had an opinion on what the identity of a Canuck player should be. And that is that you line up against someone, the other team comes in to play against you, and they're like, oh, man, I'm going to have a rough night tonight. Like, these guys are going to give me a hard time tonight. And he felt that, you know, the team had to get back to their identity. And, you know, everything went right for them last night. You got the bounce. And now we see if it stays there and goes. But the other thing that Smeal said to me was really interesting was, you know, I just said that, you know, what happens if until a new GM is picked or a new president of hockey ops is picked, you know, what happens? Like, what if someone comes to you and says, you know, we're interested in making a big move for a player? And, you know, he just said that, you know, that the group there, they all feel that if something like that comes their way and it makes sense for the long term of the organization, then they'll consider it. And he said that he wouldn't have taken the job without the ability to do that, because you can't have a paralysis right now. You have to be willing to go about your business.
Mm-hmm. What? And listen, that was like when he spoke. Like, and you can just like, not that Twitter is the ultimate audit, but it seemed like that really resonated with Canucks fans. Like hearing Stan Smeal talking there, to your point, like legendary Vancouver Canuck, that really found a home with Canucks fans. Freach.
Well, I have to think it wasn't. Like, on some level, I have to think it was symbolic, right? Like, basically saying that here's a guy, the first, you know, the first player in Canucks history to have his number retired. And, you know, like, last night I was reminded that when you go back to the 2012 NHL draft, so that year the Canucks drafted Brendan Gaunce in the first round. And they called Stan Smeal up. When they were making their pick, Stan Smeal was brought up onto the stage because they pointed out that they wanted to honor him because this was going to be the first player to put a number 12 jersey on since Stan Smeal's jersey was retired in 1991. So that was 21 years since that number had been worn, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what the Canucks were doing is they were saying, look, we know that there's an expectation of how you want us to play and what you expect us to be in the market. Like, every hockey market around has a vision. The fans have someone who they say, like, that's a Canuck. That's what we want to be. Or that's a Flame. That's what we want the Flames want to be. Or that's a Maple Leaf. That's who the Maple Leafs should be, or in our eyes. And in Vancouver, Stan Smith is very much that guy. And I just think it's really interesting that he was the choice, because it's a committee, but he's the face. And I think it's because ownership there knows how much that face means to the fan base.
What did you make of the game itself? We talked so much about the Gabby bump, you know, what Bruce Boudreau can do for a team. We talked here and on the podcast about offensive players getting a shot in the arm from Boudreau. We saw that yesterday. I think we all wanted to see, you know, Pettersson score that goal. Besser did score his fifth, so the 13-game drought is over. Again, it's only one game. There's only so much effect one coach can have on one game when he takes over. But what did you take away from game one of the Gabby era in Vancouver?
Well, you know, I love how he swore when he got up from the microphone. I thought that was fantastic. it's funny. Like, he goes out and he said, what did he say about Besser? I don't remember the exact line, but he basically said, I hope he like banks one in. I hope he banks
crap
one
for
in.
Passing.
He does it. Yeah. No, but he says, I hope he gets a fluke one tonight. Or he says, sometimes all it takes is a fluke goal and you get going, right? And he gets the bounce. Like, the Lotto Max is $55 million tonight. I should ask him to pick my numbers, so I don't have to do this. So I don't have to do the radio tomorrow. But
oh, how dare you!
I think that, you know, like, it was a night where everything went. What I thought was interesting was, you know, we saw different personnel on the penalty kill. Like, basically, what he was doing was he was trying things, and. You know, the other thing, too, is he goes out and he says that some player said, can I do the penalty kill tonight? And all of a sudden, there's some different people on the penalty kill. Like,
that's only part of it. That's only because Gabby said, yeah, I'll let you try it, but if it doesn't work out, don't ever ask me again.
Right. But the thing is, like, what you control, like, when you go in there, like, every coach goes in and says, okay, we all have a clean slate now, right? And what happened before doesn't matter. And, you know, sometimes players believe it and sometimes they don't. But I think what that did last night was, at least the bench looks at it, or the players look at it and says, okay, it is new. Like, and that's, I think, when things are struggling and a team is going through an awful time, you have to find something that convinces your players that, okay, it is going to be different. Even, like, it's never only the coach's fault. Like, that's never the case. But you have to break them out of their kind of misery. And between the win and the Besser goal and people in new roles, I think what you have is you get the players saying, okay, it is going to be different, and it gives you some life. Now you just got to make sure it's not just the bounce and there's something to it.
The homestand continues for the Vancouver Canucks, and the Bruce "There It Is" chant last night in the third period was really something. It was like 7 or 8 minutes left, and the Bruce "There It Is" chant started going in Vancouver yesterday. Meanwhile, Bob Gainey, we find out now, legendary Bob Gainey. When you think of the Selke Trophy, consider this was pretty much created for him. Now part of the search committee for the next general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Do you know where this one came from, Freach?
No, I mean, it was a good story yesterday. I just think that it was a good story yesterday. The committee thing is very interesting to me, because the one thing I'm curious about here is, what's the whole front office going to look like? Like, how many people are getting hired here, and what's the structure? So I wonder if it's more than just a GM hire. It's who else out there should we be looking at? I have to say, and I'm kind of wondering about it in Vancouver, and I'm wondering about it in Chicago, and I'm wondering about Anaheim. Are we headed into, and whoever else eventually makes changes, are we heading into a new era of front offices here?
It feels that way.
It does. It does.
It definitely feels that way. Like, once upon a time, we looked at the Detroit model and said, wow, how many brains can they have around the table? So when Ken Holland had, like, you know, he'd look to the left and he'd see Jim Neal. He'd look to the right and he'd see Steve Eisenman. Like, all around, like, there were, you know, big brains all around the table. And then a lot of teams tried to ape that and go that philosophy. It seems as if, though, this is going to be a new model. Listen, Jeff Gorton talked about this last week. This should come as no surprise that there'll be new thinking and a new model here for management of the Montreal Canadiens. I completely believe that for each.
And that's what I think this is about. It's not only about finding a GM, it's about identifying other talent that you can bring into your organization and how that structure is going to look like. I think Bob Gainey's really smart. And, you know, I think that he's got a lot of really interesting ideas, and I recognize that he might not want to, like, when he retired as GM, he was done. So, you know, he probably doesn't want to put a full-time emphasis into this, but if you've got him as part of your group just, you know, throwing in ideas or brainstorming, how's that bad? And that's what I kind of wonder if that's what this is.
Hey, I'm just seeing something here. Craig Bird, you see the story in St. Louis about Robert Thomas sitting out due to cap reasons tonight? And they're going one skater short, 10 forward, 7D?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to read a little bit more about this. When I saw it, I glanced at it yesterday, but between the Philly and Vancouver stuff, I haven't... Doug Armstrong this year, very clear, not so much publicly, but privately, about how he feels about the cap and COVID situation. And he's talked to the league several times about how he feels about this. And you know, I have to tell you, there's differing opinions on it. Like, there's some teams who really agree with him who think this isn't fair. Because, look, like, everybody's vaccinated except one player, and you can still get COVID if you're vaccinated and following protocols. You can still get it. And they think that it's not fair. Like, if everyone's taken, almost everyone's taken the proper precautions and it still wreaks havoc on your situation, they think there should be room for it to get help. And there's other people who say, nope, we know everyone knew the rules. And if you were too tight to the cap, too bad. Of course, most people who think that are far away from the cap and they want to hijack the teams that are close to it, but, you know, everybody's got their self-interest.
Yeah,
I just know this year, like, and I have to say, Jeff, as a media member and a fan who roots for good games and good competition, I don't like it. I think if you're COVID compliant and it wrecks your roster, I don't like that. I really don't like that.
To your point about the other teams that aren't spending up to the cap, you're right. It's only a problem when it's your bull that gets gored. All of a sudden, then there's an issue.
Funny how that works, eh? What do you think?
No, I don't like it either. I actually like your idea of any overages counting against next year's salary cap. Because I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this from a competitive point of view. I don't like this from a fan's point of view. And I don't like this. I mean, it might be a stretch, but I don't like it from a player safety point of view. I look at full rosters as a player safety exercise for exhausted players come third period. I don't know. I there's nothing that I like about it. And I like the idea of, okay, you know what? You want to go over due to COVID and only due to COVID, that's fine. That money has to get accounted somewhere. So we'll kick it to next season. I like that idea a lot. I'm not a big fan of this. Like, St. Louis has to go 10-7 tonight because of the cap and because of the
situation. How painful is it for you to admit that one of my ideas is actually good?
I'm actually right now opening up a bottle of mouthwash, and when you go off the air, I'm going to rinse my mouth out before I talk to Andy Strickland at the bottom of the hour more about this St. Louis Blues situation. So very, very well timed here. More things.
I'm sure that Andy will take an anti Doug Armstrong position on this.
We shall see.
No way.
The The Washington Capitals, meanwhile, top team in the NHL. Yes. So they win last night. It's an exciting game against the Anaheim Ducks. Ovechkin, you know, is back at it. He's just not slowing down. He's he's Pac-Man, just, you know, gobbling up dots here. It's remarkable, and they find themselves now the top team in the NHL. The Ovechkin story is the easy one to go to, and we all go to it for good reason. We're loving the goal scoring chase and the 36-year-old that is proving that time can be defeated for now. The guy that I'm curious about through all of this is Tom Wilson. Now, Brian McClellan was on the program last week, and I don't know if he let slip or if it's common knowledge that, you know, part of the motivation for Tom Wilson this year is he's on the long list for Team Canada.
Yeah.
Many will say it's a long shot list for someone like Tom Wilson, but
I don't know how long a shot it is, to be honest.
Well, okay, so that's what I want to come around to here, because we'll talk a lot about Ovechkin, and we'll talk plenty about Kuznetsov. Tom Wilson's essentially a point-of-game player. Tom Wilson just had, we think, oh, Tom Wilson, you know, caged animal. It's a first fight of the season yesterday against Simon Benoit. First fight, by the way, for the entire Washington Capitals team.
Yep.
Like, this is a guy that's playing 20 minutes a night. This is a guy that kills penalties. This is a big, strong, you know, 6'4", 220-pound guy that can kill penalties, take a 5-on-5 shift. Is Tom Wilson a really quiet, great story this season that no one seems to want to chat about?
Well, you know why? Because, like, I think there's probably people out there who don't want to admit that Tom Wilson's a really good player.
I agree 100% with that, too. That's two for each. That's 2 points. Yeah. That I agree with.
Well, like, you know what? Like, I think he's an excellent player. I really do. I think he has to, you know, keep control of himself a lot better at times, but he's done it this year, no question about it. I am not surprised in the least. Again, we're talking Doug Armstrong here because he's the GM of Team Canada. I am not surprised in the least that he's on the long list with Armstrong in charge, because you look at the way that St. Louis plays. You know, if Wilson was ever available, I bet you he'd be at the forefront of the line to go get him.
Looks like we've talked about this before. Before there were the Broad Street Bullies, there were the St. Louis Blues. There is a Broad Street Bullies because there was a St. Louis Blues. And they've always had and cherished rugged players. They've always liked sluggers. They go back to the very first game they played. Like, this is, like, I look at Tom Wilson and we're just used to seeing him in a Caps uniform. But to your point, if you said, okay, whose identity does he fit? Like, that guy looks like a St. Louis Blue to me. He looks like a St. Louis Blues guy through and through.
And you know, the thing is, too, is that I remember, so, you know, Gary Galley played at Bowling Green when Brian McClellan was there. I think McClellan was in his senior when Galley was a freshman. And Galley said that McClellan as a player was a tough, mean guy. And so I would bet that Brian McClellan looks a lot at Tom Wilson and says, that's what I like. That's what I like. And like we've both talked about, he's an impactful, effective player. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear that. That's just the fact. He just had to learn to control himself. And so far this year, he's doing it.
Quick point about Brian McClellan. There was a time there during the 80s when he played for the Minnesota North Stars. There were two guys specifically who played in the league that didn't put up the huge penalty minutes, and that's because everybody knew not to mess with them. One was Kurt Frazier, who never put up like the 300, but that guy was raw bone tough, and everyone knew, like, if you pick something with Kurt Frazier, you're going to get a piece taken off of you. And Brian McClellan was that guy as well. Real quiet, you know, didn't want to start anything, but when he went for it, Frege, oh man, that guy was all kinds of tough. Brian McClellan in that era. And this is like the late 80s, too. And you remember the Norris division at that point where everybody had four or five. And Willie Plett was at 400 minutes. And everybody, Brian McClellan was such a sneaky, tough dude. Speaking of Minnesota, real quick, end on this one. Minnesota, Edmonton tonight. The Oilers have lost two in a row. I mean, he's on a 6-game winning streak. Saw them on Hockey Night in Canada. Looked fantastic, etc. The Oilers lately haven't played great. Dave Tippett saying this has been coming for a while. Your thoughts on Edmonton right now?
You know what? I think I think that, you know, coaches are natural worriers and panickers. I do think that, I do think in 5-on-5, look, anytime your power play is clicking at the pace that theirs is at, record pace, it covers up for a lot of things, right?
Yep.
I think they have to become a better 5-on-5 team. I'm not surprised in the least that Tippett is going this route, that is what he is trying to say, because as a coach, you want to get the attention of your team. And they've got a good record, and they're battling for first place, so people tend to look at that. You know, the best coaches, they nitpick you a bit when they're going well. And, you know, that's what he's doing. He's sounding the alarm a little bit. Hey, we look good, but we got to make sure we don't turn this into a bad thing or go off track. And after a 5-1 loss to L.A. or whatever it was, that's a good time to get on you. And this Minnesota team, you know, they don't get a lot of attention up here, but, you know, that was a hell of a game against Toronto on Saturday night. That was just a great game to watch. Yeah. And they can embarrass you if you look bad, if you're having a bad night.
They're fast and they're strong for each. Like, it's a lethal combination. It's a fun team to watch. And we all know there's cap hell coming up for them. But, man, this is a fun team to watch. This ain't your granddad's Minnesota Wild. Okay, on that, you released. We will see you in Florida, Freege, next time you and I speak, or maybe at the airport, for the Board of Governors meeting later on this week. Thanks, Bal. Talk soon.
All right. I hope you're not sitting anywhere close to me. That's all I ask.
Oh no, you'll be up in the front with all the expensive people, and I'll be in the back with the livestock. That's how our lives are. That's the difference.
That's not true.
That's where we'll be. Thank you, Freege. Talk soon.
All right, bye, Jeff. Bye.